It's the Big Wake Up Call. I'm Ryan Gatenby, and happy to talk to my next guest. He is a radio legend, a Hall of Fame broadcaster. He helped introduce America to the Beatles, literally introduced them at the legendary Shea Stadium concert, and he's returning to where it all happened with a new show on WABC in New York, the Saturday Night Rock and Roll Party, and we are going to visit with Cousin Brucey Morrow, and good morning. Welcome to the show.
Well, good morning to you. Thank you so much. Good to talk to you. Yeah, I'm very excited. You have a very excited cousin right now. Very happy. I've sort of, my career has gone around a real beautiful full circle. About 40 some odd years ago, I left terrestrial radio, WABC, and I started venturing out until the last 15 years I spent with Sirius XM on satellite radio. And I'll tell you, one day I woke up, probably midstream of the 15 years, and I knew that I was missing something. I wasn't as happy as I wanted to be. There was something lacking in what I was doing. And what I realized is that I wasn't doing local radio anymore with that good, warm hometown feeling. I was doing corporate radio. Now, today, as you know and I know, there's no such thing as a pure local radio station. Of course, local radio stations, no matter what the size, reach the whole world, thanks to all of our digital devices.
Yeah.
So there's no such thing as local radio, but it still can have a local feel. And people love that. They like the hometown feel. So I knew I had to get back to that. And then eventually, somebody I knew from the air used to call me for a request, believe it or not, and dedications, bought WABC. And I couldn't believe that one person bought this mega monster radio station out of New York. And he did, and he and I started talking. And it's a talk radio station, and I'm kind of the oasis in the middle of it on Saturday night. So from all the tough politics, the political talk, and they have a lot of general talk shows too. So I'm the oasis, and I go on from 6 p.m. Eastern to 9 p.m. And I play my music. I play 50s, 60s, and 70s and talk to a lot of people, have guests, and we have a good time.
There is just something, and maybe it's because, I mean, I'm, grew up with AM radio, music radio in the 70s and even into the 80s before everything switched over to FM. And to me, that's just, I don't know, that's the way I grew up experiencing music. I know there's a younger generation like, oh, AM radio, why do I want to hear music there? There's something, especially an oldie, I don't know if I just have a romance with it or if it's just the warmth or the immediacy, but there is something about it. I just feel more connected to the radio station when I hear it that way.
I think you're right on the money. I think, you know, you said one word I loved. In fact, I'm going to use it if you didn't copyright it. You said the word romance.
Yeah.
That's a great word. That describes it. And what I'm doing here is that AM radio has been sort of neglected for a while, as you know, except for talk. It's sort of it reached its own corner. But, you know, today the audience is so darn sophisticated that they really want more than just a device. They want content. And if you give them the content they want, they'll go anywhere, including, like I tell people, I'm in so many devices today that if you open your refrigerator, go to the freezer section, I bet you hear my voice there.
Yeah.
It's all over the place. So I think what we're dealing with today is all of us in the business are realizing content is king, and that's where they're going. So it won't matter what the device is, if it's the latest digital thing that you could put in your nose or whatever they're working on today, who knows? It's wonderful. I think people really want to hear things that they want to hear. So with this romance, as you called it, which is a great word, you coined it, with the oldies format and the feeling of talking to people on the air, I do a lot of telephones. We have guests, do a lot of features. And this is great. I'm going to give you two things that happened. When I signed the new deal with WABC, I figured, well, I'm going to bring it to 2020. It's 2020 now, going to 21. I'm going to get rid of a couple of the old gimmicks and bring it up to date. Well, you know, today we are no longer the bosses. We're no longer the producers and directors. Social media is. at social media, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of emails came in. They wanted the jiggles. They wanted the romance. There's your word again. Of the old 60s jiggles, which became almost as important as some of the music. And I was not going to do, I don't know if you remember, but back in the 60s, a lot of us used reverb, a little echo, a little reverb to warm up the sound. So I wasn't going to do this anymore. I figured that's enough of that. But I was wrong. The Vox Populare, the people's voice, demanded they wanted the echo. So they wanted the music. They wanted the jiggles. They wanted me talking to people. And they wanted their reverb. And that's exactly what I'm getting them. And what this is all about, really, if you think about it, this is an escape. Because this time in our lives, as you know, we are really, you know, we're nervous. We're all nervous novices. We're all anxiety-ridden. And they look for, the audience will look for anything to get an escape and go back to a time when they thought they perceived as a little more innocent, a little more safe. And that's what I'm doing. I'm giving them this safety catch. I'm giving them a bridge. And I'm giving them an escape. And I tell you, I'm in love with what I'm doing, which is the first time in a long time that I really felt so good.
Thinking back to the radio stations I grew up with, AM radio, and why you listen to a particular DJ or a personality or not, is like they were all playing the same songs. That was fine. I could get that anywhere. But it was a combination of the show, the performance of the show, and the relationship. And if I felt like I had a one-on-one relationship, that DJ was doing a show for me, talking to me, that's what kept me there. And I think maybe in a general sense, national radio, you don't have that relationship. On a local level, you feel like that personality is accessible. Like I could actually know that person.
Exactly. It's you become sort of a family member. It's one-on-one.
Yeah.
I learned a long time ago when I was a youth many years ago that you don't ever talk at people, you talk to them. So I give the impression, and I really feel it, that I'm talking directly to a person, or maybe a group of persons. I never talk to an audience at large, never, right? I want them to get that personal feeling, and that's what I do, and they get that. And I get that back from them, which is very important. So it's really two ways. And if you get that straight, you get that feeling that you're talking to somebody, not at. You can't miss. Then you combine them with the romance. Well, I think you have a very successful formula.
So you are there, WABC, one of the biggest stations in the country. The British invasion is just starting. When did you know that, you know, the Beatles were building in England? When did you get a sense they were probably going to come over here and be huge?
Well, I knew about 1962, I started reading and started receiving records from one of these, you know, smaller labels that had the Silver Beatles and the Beatles with it.
Yeah.
So I started receiving some of those early recordings, and I knew there was something going on there. At our music meetings, it took a couple of years, because a lot of the attitudes were, hey, who cares about these Brits? You know, all they're doing is imitating Chuck Berry and Jerry Lee Lewis and the Everly Brothers and Elvis with a little British accent. So we weren't interested. And then little by little, we were watching things happening in Europe. Things were happening. And at the same time, if you remember, the American music industry was getting very tired. Nothing new was happening. You know, like the old American corporate attitude, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Leave it alone. So we were getting the same things over and over. And yet here were some of these new recordings and new excitement coming from England, from some of the early groups like the Beatles, and it sounded good. And we were watching what was going on over there. There were riots. It was like the old days when rock and roll first started with Elvis. So we knew, obviously, but this was it. So by the time the Beatles came over, by the way, a little postscript here, the Beatles just didn't come over and were given a welcoming hand. The Lord didn't say, you were good people, I giveth you the Beatles.
Yeah.
The Beatles were given a lot of hype, a lot of money behind them, a lot of promotion. So by the time they came over here, everybody knew who was going to be here. They knew about them. And we were ready for something, because very honestly, We were going through some pretty rough times politically. We had assassinations. Racial strife was very, very, very terrible at that time. Still is, but, you know, we're getting there. But at that time, nothing was happening. So the country was in a depression. We needed something to smile at. We were losing our muscles that let us smile. So here they are, these four strange lads with strange haircuts, these mop-top haircuts that our parents hated. Of course, they were different. And we knew right away that this was going to be something very different. I'll give you a cute story. Do we have time for a cute story?
Absolutely.
This will be an illustration of what it was like. 2 weeks before the Beatles arrived, we know that there's something happening because we're all talking about it, playing a record once in a while. And here's a kid who calls me. His name is Joey. And Joey gets on the phone with me on the air, and he says, "Hey, Brucey, hey, cuz, how you doing? This is Joey from the Bronx. Would you play a record for me and my girl? Her name is Susie. Play something by the King Elvis, will you? We love you, Brucey." All right, he'd hang up. 2 weeks later, the Beatles arrived, and all heck was breaking loose. You couldn't turn a corner without seeing a picture of a Beatle or hearing something. Well, the same guy calls me 2 weeks later, and he sounds like this now. "Hello? Is this Sir Brucey? This is Sir Joseph of the Bronxshire on the Grand Concourse Shire. Would you please play a record for me and me bird, Lady Suzette?"
Nice.
Right? Now, what I'm trying to show by that, and that's a kind of fun thing as an illustration, but it was pretty true. Suddenly, everybody became Anglophiles. We all had British accents. We admired what they were doing. We wore the clothes. We cut our hair. Right? We spoke like them. So what has happened is that this particular bunch of guys called the Beatles were more than just music. They became a sociological attachment to all of us. So the thing started, and it just grew. And then, of course, more groups came over. We called it the British Invasion. And all heck was breaking loose. And the best part of it is that the American music industry now realized they had to do something different. They had to now get on the stick because we were having competition.
So when you're there in the middle of it, and oh my gosh, you wind up introducing the Beatles at Shea Stadium. It's such an exciting phenomenon, but I don't think anyone at the time could predict it. Here we are, you know, 50, 60 years later, we're still talking about the Beatles. They're still as relevant as ever.
Right. I wish I could say we were that smart, because very honestly, we weren't even smart in those days. I don't think anybody realized that the Beatles were going to become not only the greatest musicians and band of all time, but they would become such a part of our DNA. None of us realized that. And they still are. I mean, young people are enjoying the Beatles today. The Beatles were a real great common denominator. And they'll always be around. They're going to be around for a long, long time. Because young people feel that they invented them also. They had this this gorgeous common denominator. And they caught it. And they were very part of our lives. They became a sociological phenomenon. You know, when I introduced them at Shea Stadium with Ed Sullivan, we had 50, 60,000 screaming kids there, most of them young ladies. And we were in the dugout, and John came over to me, and he said, and we were waiting to go on stage, and he said to me, "Cousin," he always called me cousin, "cousin, is this going to be safe?" Because even with all the riots and all the crowds that they had in Europe, they never, ever felt or saw anything quite like this. The 60,000 people in the stands, you could feel the electricity. It was scary. To this day, I could conjure up that feeling in my chest. Yeah, it was a kind of a feeling that you never knew what was going to happen. But he asked me, he said, "Cousin, is this going to be okay? Are we safe?" They were very scared because of this feeling that was coming from this tsunami up from the stands. And I said, "John, you're going to be very safe. All they want to do is be here and share space." Of course, I was lying. I was scared stiff because I didn't know what was going to happen. You know, I never felt anything like this. Well, anyway, postscript is Ed Sullivan and I walked up the stairs, up the steps, which I call the scaffold at home base, to introduce the Beatles. And he turned around to me, Sullivan, who was kind of a square. And he said to me, "Brucey, cousin Brucey, is this going to be okay? because he was scared too. Because you felt the pressure. You know, I don't know if you've ever had a crowd that you feel the pressure, but this was tenfold the pressure on your body. And I looked at him and I said, "Ed, it's not going to be okay. It's dangerous." He says, "It is. What do we do?" And I looked at him right in the eye and I said, "Pray." And he looked at me and he said, "Pray?" And he turned around. He walked up the stairs. I wanted to get him a little bit because I know he didn't even know who the Beatles really were. He really didn't know. And we went up and everything was fine. That day, while the Beatles were singing that nobody ever heard, we couldn't hear them. The sound, the cacophony from the crowd was so loud, they couldn't even hear themselves singing on the stage. And there were many talks about that with the guys. And I walked around with the police and the security and helping calm the kids down. But really, all they wanted to be there was to share space with these people. And to go back to an original statement I made, we all needed something to hang our coats on. We needed some levity. We needed something to relax the anxiety.
And it is, so the Saturday Night Rock and Roll Party, it's on WABC in New York. But, of course, you can hear that worldwide online. And what time was that again, Bruce?
We're on from 6 p.m. until 9 Eastern. And I'll break some news to you. I'm going to extend it another hour.
Oh, okay.
Popular demand. I haven't discussed this yet because I'm going to talk about it on the air this coming Saturday. But to let you know, you got an exclusive. I'm going to go till 10 o'clock. The demand has been so great, right? It's so great, and I'm thrilled about it, that we're adding another hour for the show. So it'll be 6 to 10. And as I said, nobody knows that yet, right? So don't tell anybody, okay?
All right, yeah, we'll bleep that part out. Don't worry about it. It's been so great to chat with you. We got a rock and roll radio original. It's Cousin Brucey back on AM radio on WABC. And thank you so much for joining me today and sharing the stories. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Love talking to you and to the audience out there. Well, rock and roll, kids.